Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires.
Welcome back to another week of Maggie and the Millionaires Talk Money. Today, we're joined by another member of the Patriotic Millionaires, Dr. Karen Stewart. She's a retired business professor, the former owner and operator of residential care facilities for the elderly, and a 40-year veteran of the financial planning business. She's here today to talk about her time with the PMs and her experience with the federal tax code. Welcome, Karen. It's a real privilege to have you.
Thank you, Maggie. It's nice to be here. It's quite a topic. Let's see what we can cover, right?
Yes, it is quite a topic. That's why we devote every day in these 30 minutes to these issues, because there's so much to get through. Can you tell us just a little bit about yourself? How did you make enough money to join the Patriotic Millionaires?
Well, there are three little letters, OPM, other people's money. No, I didn't steal it. No, yet, but I did borrow it. I have excellent credit, always have had. It's very important. And I lived frugally and saved enough, to get into a little piece of property. And when that one grew in value, sold that, bought another piece of property. Sold that, bought another piece of property, and it appreciated so much that my husband and I said, let's borrow money on this one, buy the second one. So they both are rising in value. And guess what? The second one was paying itself off because the tenants paid me the rent, and we paid the mortgage, which was to our benefit because our mortgage dropped. So our mortgage was dropping and the property was appreciating. Very good deal. And that's called leverage. And started really small back in 1971. I know. If somebody's grandmother here. But by the time my husband and I sold out, we had 225 apartments in the Portland, Oregon area, having bought lots of stuff in between. And as those things we bought in between appreciated, in the real estate industry, you can take the profit and roll it into the next property. You don't have to pay taxes on any profitable sale like you do with stocks. So made sense to me.
We're going to drill into that, but I just one little thing popped into my mind, Ms. Karen, as you were speaking. And that is, as you referenced back to when you started in your real estate investments, that it was in the 70s. I have a little saying for you, Ms. Karen, and it's experience without wisdom is just wasted time. So I very much respect your experience and wisdom. Tell everybody how we can benefit from that. I think you just got to the core of it. How does real estate work as a tax avoidance strategy?
Well, it actually doesn't. We didn't get in it specifically for that reason, but boy, did it pay off. So let's just say buy a piece of property for $100,000, and you can determine that the properties that you purchased had $30,000 was for the dirt, $70,000 was for the property, and that $70,000 is for the building, for the plumbing, for the electrical, all that sort of thing. Those things were physically built by humans and will depreciate through time and they will wear out. And so in order to compensate the owners, the tax law says you can take a percentage of that every single year. You don't have to pay it, by the way. It doesn't come out of your pocket, but since it's deteriorating, you get to write it off. In other words, it lowers your tax on the income. So what's odd about it is over all our experience, it appreciated, even though the property was wasting away, if you want to say. And so that was a real good deal, because toward the end of our time with these apartments, we wrote off $300,000 a year and didn't have to, and it was completely deductible. So we paid no income tax because we didn't have $300,000 worth of taxable income. So we paid no tax. Aha, but there's a little catch. When you sell, which we did not, we don't own anymore. We decided to pay, excuse me, our partners. Our partners were you, the taxpayers. You taxpayers allowed us to use your money for decades. And finally, we said, I said, no more, excuse me, no more messes. It's really quite a process to have that many people in your apartments. Excuse me. So we paid over $1 million in taxes, gratefully, gladly, because you folks had helped us with this endeavor. And we kept the balance, which was plenty enough for us to retire in 2014.
So two things here of interest to me, and no pun intended. And that is
the other interest.
Yes, the other kind of interest. That is the combination of two things. And I know about depreciation. I did a lot of tax law back in my old days as a lawyer. And what I think a lot of regular folks don't understand is when they think about real estate, they think real estate in general, there are extraordinary times and cycles, certainly. But in general, real estate will be worth more next year than it was this year. All else being equal, absent some big shocks or contractions. Sure. And certainly over a long term, real estate in 20 years, the same plot is more likely than not going to be worth more than it is today. And yet, from an income tax perspective, there is this legal fiction, and I'm going to say that as a lawyer, it is a legal fiction that the actual building, that is depreciating, and yet this depreciation value each year, this legal made up depreciation with some arbitrary rate, is used to reduce income tax. While, as most of us understand intuitively, especially over the long run, the value of the real estate is going up. So you're able to reduce your year over year income while the overall value of the real estate is increasing. You can always borrow against that value. And if you are not so honorable as you and your husband were, Karen, you could never sell that or put it into a trust. And if you die having never sold it, it will pass to your kids
step up in basis.
So when we talk about somebody who claims to be this like crackerjack real estate investor, I don't know, somebody by the name of Donald Trump is just an example. He claims all kinds of depreciation because his buildings are extraordinarily expensive to build. Are these actual losses? It's not, are they?
Well, it depends. It depends because truly, property that buildings that sit on real estate that is not desirable will eventually crumble and will become worthless, or needs to be scraped and something else built there. Since I'm in California, and this is where I got my start, thank goodness, along the coast of California. San Diego now. I was in Los Angeles when I first started in college. I was still in college. So things appreciate here, but primarily for two reasons here. Highly desirable dirt and the cost of replacing the structures due to all kinds of things, cost of the building materials, the wages to pay, and also the permits that are required. High desirability of property in a moderate climate is also part of it. So we have a lot of influx. There's a lot of talk about people leaving California, but folks keep coming in.
Yeah, people are always going to want to live where it's 75 degrees most days all year round. That's highly desirable. You're not going to lose value in real estate.
Yeah, it's the old, demand and supply,
Yes, ma'am.
It is the ultimate economic law. So, but for other areas that are quite stable, the Midwest, for instance, from my experience, does not have that need. You don't have that physical restraint that we have here. The ocean is only so big, and we have, 40 million people in California. More people than I guess the next the smallest, I don't know, 30.
But Karen, if I can just jump in, is the idea of depreciation, setting the differences in available land and the desirability, we know in the long term, most real estate increases in value. Is the depreciation an actual loss, or is it for all intents and purposes?
Generally speaking, I would say from my experience, it is certainly not a loss, and certainly doesn't come out of the income.
Yes.
But it is a creation. And it's an effort to compensate people whose property actually does depreciate. But if you're in the right market, it's a gift.
Yes. It's a tax gift from taxpayers to landowners.
Go ahead. I was just going to say a real quick thing, but it will bite you in the end because you have to recapture it. But at a low rate. Go ahead.
No problem, folks. This is my very special guest for today's episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talk Money. Her name is Dr. Karen Seal Stewart. She's a retired business professor, real estate investor, and registered investment advisor. What made you and your husband, as millionaires, want to advocate for higher taxes for yourself?
Well, I was a working class kid. Literally, my mother was in the soup kitchens in the Great Depression. And my father was an itinerant worker during the Great Depression. Neither even went to high school. And my dad was a union man with Union Oil, wore a hard hat and a lunch pail. And my mother loved FDR and the New Deal and all the things that ushered in to give folks a safety net. And as I learned, I'm also a certified financial planner. And when I got into that training and learned the sections on taxes and experienced the benefits as we filed our own taxes, we said, this isn't really fair. This isn't fair. And add to that other kinds of income that, as long as you don't earn it,
yes,
are tax-free up to the first, $45,000 a person, $90,000 a year, zero taxes on, as you know, long-term capital gains and qualified dividends. I said, this is absolutely not fair. A lot of people could live, well, anybody could live very well on a married couple between that and the standard deduction, well over $100,000 a year, absolutely no federal income tax. But if you earn that, you're going to have to pay taxes.
Yeah, if it's a paycheck, we're going to pay taxes. Yep. If it's this imaginary investment income, we're not. Dr. Karen Seal Stewart, a retired business professor, real estate investor, and registered investment advisor. Karen, my dad is also a CFP, so I know exactly what went into all of that. They are grueling licensure exams, to be sure.
Don't relive
that those times. Not fun. We were talking about why you and your husband, coming from middle class beginnings, you invested your way into becoming wealthy and millionaires, and yet you both reached the same conclusion that the way our tax code is structured simply isn't fair to working people. I've always struggled with the idea that a dollar earned from work is taxed more heavily than a dollar earned from invested wealth, right? Like, it's still a dollar. They're both dollars. They've both been earned. And yet we tax the one that comes from actual labor much differently than we tax other dollars. Why do you think that tax breaks are available for investors like you and not for working people?
Well, he who has the gold makes the rules. You know, that's it. Follow the money. You know, that's the thing. Once people get power and how about lobbying? There's lobbying. There's some bribery in some parts of the world, which I can't imagine, but that does exist. And all sorts of ways that you can convince people that if we have like trickle down economics was such a farce, to say that giving people, for instance, you know, somebody who has what do you even do with $100 million or $1 billion or $100? I mean, it's just beyond comprehension to think that that money won't wind up in the Bahamas or in a yacht or in another island that I you know, I'm going to have an archipelago after a while because I keep buying so many islands strung out there. I mean, it's just, it is, you know, it is pure greed, power. And sadly, I also taught women's studies. It seems to be a particular affliction of the males in our species. It's like a giant, you know, contest. So,
we'll leave the blank part of that contest unsaid, Karen. Yes.
but the thing is, you know, I got more than you do. You know, it's because it's, if your net worth rises by $50,000 a minute, what is, you know, nevertheless,
Karen, it seems to me that over the last 50 years, and we had a guest on Maggie and the Millionaires Talk Money last week, who pointed out that over the last 50 years, what we've done is effectively legalize corruption by declaring that corporations are people and money is speech. And if money is speech, people with the most money get to scream while the rest of us are barely speaking in a whisper. And if you get to scream and yell and you can buy the most amount of speech, it means you can decide who wins elections. And if you can decide who wins elections, because money is speech, you get to tell those elected officials what kind of tax policy there should be. And if we've decided that money is speech and rich people get to yell at politicians and pick them and then tell them what sort of policies we want to have, then rich people are going to tell the politicians that the policies they want to see are the policies that keep them in the driver's seat, that keep them in power, that preserves their wealth. And it creates this unending cycle of corruption.
It's sort of like King Midas, turning everything into gold. And Thomas Piketty, the famous economist from France, kind of, as I recall, he had a comment that said, pretty soon with the folks who have the oligarchs of the world are going to own everything that can be owned. Mm. And Henry Ford was a wise guy way back, a wise person.
Jerk, but a smart businessman. Yes.
He was a wise guy and he was a jerk. Anti-Semitic, all sorts of other things. Mm-hmm. However, he had the foresight to say, I cannot sell these vehicles if nobody has the money to buy them. Therefore, I'm going to overpay my workers so that they have the money to buy these Ford cars.
Yes.
So if folks get too greedy over time, there's nobody left to buy their stuff and they've absorbed it all. They've eaten it all. Et cetera. There's no place for people to live. We've got some of this going on right now. No place to live, hardly anything to eat, working for dirt wages, or you know, et cetera, cutting out the safety net. You know,
yes.
Calling people who need help welfare queens, et cetera. Okay, now what are you going to do? You've got it all the marbles, all the chips are in your side of the table, and you've killed your economy, and you've killed your consumers. And good for you. You own it now. I guess Monopoly, the game's over.
Yeah, nobody's there to buy it.
Well, and what is this going to do to our community, to our world?
Yes.
And to our country. And it's working on it right now.
We're coming up on time, Karen. So I wanted to ask you one last question. What did the Trump tax cut do for you and your wealthy peers?
Oh, I was just trying to make first of all, those of us who are in states where there has been a lot of appreciation and housing is very costly, our property taxes almost always exceed $10,000 a year. But now we can only deduct on state and local taxes, SALT, S-A-L-T, we can only deduct $10,000 a year. Mm. And it used to be that people could have a very expensive home and maybe deduct $35,000 because they have so much tax, but it's down to 10. That was the only bad thing I can think of. So let's think of large estate breaks. That large estate, you can leave a lot more money to your heirs. We lowered the top rate from 39 to 37%. The amount that you can get in long-term capital gains and qualified dividends is adjusted according to the CPI.
Just in summary, Karen, very briefly here, he made it easier for rich people to get even richer. Did he not? Yeah. And that's what he proposes to do again. Who are you voting for? Who are you voting for president, Karen?
Oh, Kamala in a hot second.
We're going to have to leave it there. That's my very special guest, Karen, Dr. Karen Seal Stewart, a registered investment advisor and a business professor. She's one of the Patriotic Millionaires. Thanks so much for spending some of your afternoon with us, Karen.
Thanks for listening to Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of Civic Media and the Patriotic Millionaires. For more information, go to patrioticmillionaires.org and be sure to tell your friends. The Patriotic Millionaires buy advertising across a number of Civic Media stations.